Violent arrests are taking place in New York, where
the Wall Street protests that are entering their third week in New York are now spreading to other cities.
I think that people are being inspired by their own power, and I think they're realizing it. I think that we thought we needed authority to do things, and that's one of the things that frustrated all of us so much. This movement was alive in me long before it happened. It was alive in a lot of us. That's why the movement didn't make us, we made it. And even if it all goes away, problems are still gonna be here. People are still gonna have their houses foreclosed on. They're still gonna lose their jobs. And I'm still gonna care. And I'm still gonna do something about it.
I technically have a Bank of America card, so they can't not let me in. Thanks, babe. Excuse me. It's closed? What? I'd like to use the ATM.
Bank is closed.
The bank is closed?
The bank is closed.
Will it be closed all afternoon?
I have no idea, but the bank is closed.
Where's
now.
The nearest other branch?
You have to move, please. All
right. No, I'm trying to figure out where I can
use an ATM.
I understand.
Please move.
I don't
I'm
know.
Trying to
I don't
figure out where
bank
I can
America.
Use my bank.
We don't work for Bank of America. You have to move, please. All
right. Oh, okay. They're bullies. They thrive on intimidation. But it's just epic bull. I mean, it's really stupid. And what I don't understand is, like, aren't they public servants? Isn't that the basic idea? And again, with all these laws that are being passed to criminalize activism, protest, dissent in any capacity, like, I don't get it. You own the money, you own the laws, you own the media. What is our recourse to hold you accountable?
In mid-June, a group of activists started a three-week encampment around City Hall called Bloombergville, and they were protesting the austerity budgets that Mayor Bloomberg was trying to pass, and ultimately did pass. And the occupation there didn't really capture a lot of attention. It lasted for a few weeks, but nobody really seemed to get excited about it beyond the several dozen people who were participating.
Essentially, it was disappointment with many disappointments, as I said, that had accumulated over the years, especially during the Bush administration. So it was a time where people finally awoke, essentially, to the reality that big government and big corporations had created this triangle that was suffocating civil society.
So you have the out-of-work people, the scared people, who took on mortgages that they can't now service, and then you have the bailout of the big financial firms. On top of that, we have had this stunning increase in the incomes of the very top. It's not just the top 1%, it's the top 1/10 of 1%. That's where the incomes are really, really going up to the stratosphere. So you have the very good times for the very rich, difficult times for the middle class, and terrible times for young people trying to find jobs.
Occupy emerged as a grassroots movement within this triangle to kind of create almost like a breathing space and revitalize the concept of citizenship. I think Americans, I would say, were inspired by a lot of other similar movements that were going on, especially in the Arab world. I mean, the Arab Spring was critical.
Occupy Wall Street hit the streets on September 17th, 2011, and that was the date called for by adbusters. Adbusters is an art and activism magazine based in Vancouver. The idea of Occupy Wall Street was really hatched by its founder and editor, Kali Lawson, as well as Micah White, a senior editor who lives in Berkeley, California.
I think Vancouver was key in starting the conversation or getting attention from people, but I think these movements had already started to form on a grassroots level throughout the United States.
However, the planning process for Occupy Wall Street really started in New York City on August 2nd at a meeting at the Charging Bull down in the Financial District. And that meeting, and then the meetings that followed every week between then and September 17th, were really a key period when the idea that Adbusters had proposed initially was transformed into the movement that would become Occupy.
Occupy has been the great theatrical breakthrough to create trouble in the institutions that have been stripping Americans of resources.
You know, it's funny, I don't have a history of activism whatsoever in my family. I have a history of people working hard, doing the right thing, acting like good people, and that's about all you're supposed to do. From a young age, I think I was pretty idealistic about the way the government worked and the way politics worked. And I was really interested in getting involved and seeing how you could be engaged in making people's lives better. It's kind of corny, but it's true.
Well, I'm 32 years old and I don't have children, and I don't know if I want to bring children into this world. So in the interim, you know, I'm trying to fight for everything, for not just me, but for my children and my children's children.
Generally, I've been frustrated by the system for a long time. I didn't really realize it, and I think I blamed myself a lot for my inability to really engage in certain things. So I think that the Occupy movement rolled around, I was pretty skeptical. I'd been disengaged for a long time. But there was a nagging voice in the back of my head, and I thought it was kind of silly. I didn't understand the structure. But the voice just kept saying, you know, what if it is possible? What if change is possible? What if we can do these things better? And you didn't do anything. You just kept looking for a job. You just kept looking for a little piece of land you could square off for yourself. And that's initially what got me engaged.
So, Ms. Holder.
Yes.
What are we doing today?
Today's March 8th.
What does that make it?
Forget you, Bank of America Day.
Indeed. Indeed. So, what's the deal?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to do AJ again, obviously.
AJ? AJ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Amy J, aka American Justice.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna bust corporations, bust corporatocracy, and bust corruption today as sheroes, right?
Yes!
Super sheroes. Female heroes, female identified heroes.
Initially I met Kinnae, I think, in a PR meeting, and I just remember her being fabulous. And Kinnae was just unapologetically, amazingly herself.
Elizabeth is on the PR team, so I told her about American Justice, and so it was just like, perfect. Like it's just madness, you know. And I admire that ability to play and see the humor and also the hypocrisy and the irony in what it is to be living in America right now.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We're about to play a game.
Kanae has a character who's amazing, and her name is American Justice. And American Justice is a socialite. She is blonde, she is blind, and she's vapid as all get out. She really is. She's totally out of it. She has these dice that she rolls, and they have people's fate on it.
So I thought about, instead of having dice that said, you know, dice with numbers, what if the dice had words? And what if, like, you know, you flip the dice and chances are, you know, you don't have a job. Chances are your house has been foreclosed. Chances are you don't have health care. Chances are you're surrounded by bad schools. And what if that was called the game? And what if we had those dice on the scales of justice?
The structure of Occupy is, I maybe can compare it to Athenian democracy, in that it's open to everyone, maybe unlike the Athenian democracy because only landowners could participate in decision making there, but it's open to everybody who wants to come in and express an idea, express themselves as individuals, sometimes as groups.
A lot of people, their first entree into the movement is through these bigger actions, so major mass mobilizations, big rallies, etc., or back when Zuccotti was around, going to Zuccotti and kind of experiencing it. These big spectacles that you see, which get covered and the police respond brutally against, these things happen and draw people in, but after that point, the actual day-to-day of the movement is meetings that are going on behind the scenes. What Occupy has done has been getting people together that didn't necessarily know or work together before.
The structure of the movement is always changing. It's always adapting, and new structures are being left behind, or old structures are being left behind, and new ones are being taken up. Early on, the General Assembly was really, really important. This was not only a structure, but an experience. It was a way for people to come into the movement and to get a glimpse of a kind of direct democracy so different from the corrupt democracy that we're living in. Over time, that mechanism has kind of fallen away, and now people are operating in a number of different groups which are really taking the lead in the movement. Groups like Direct Action, the Mayday group, and a number of others, and groups around the country.
And in this sense, I think Occupy works very much like, although I hate to compare it to previous social movements, but just for the sake of explanation, it works very much like labor movements worked in the 1960s and the 70s, where certain groups would be delegated certain issues, and then these group would take on these issues and then they would work on them. And this is very important because in the initial stages, there was not a great degree of follow-up. The initial stages of any social movements means you focus on the process, you focus on creating a new language, creating new meaning for the movement.
If you ask me who the leaders are, I have no names in my mind, absolutely no names. I have tents in my mind. I think they deliberately don't want to have a single leader. They don't even want to have a small group of leaders. So kind of who to talk to.
I think in a certain sense, there is an equality in the movement. There is a sense in which no one person has a particular office and has power over someone else because of that office.
The criticism that it's leaderless, of course, has its place in the sense that we are used to having a central core of every movement that we go to decide and then disseminate this information. So it has its place, and I think there's even within the movement debate around this idea of maybe some sort of leadership, at least coordinative leadership, should emerge from the movement.
Thank you. name?
What's your name?
The police have really responded quite brutally and quite excessively. It's actually been something that's actually helped the movement gain coverage, but also gain support. I remember there was the initial incident of some girls getting pepper sprayed behind a blockade or behind a netting. That really kind of helped instigate the movement and make it more than just a few people gathering, but like really masses.
Well, the NYPD in particular have been about as unpredictable as the movement in certain ways. The general tendency has been a really troubling criminalization of protests, an assumption that somebody who's out in the streets to make their voices heard is a criminal rather than a person exercising rights. Some actions have been treated with incredible force, like the March 17th reoccupation of Liberty Plaza, in which hundreds of police officers moved in and beat protesters pretty mercilessly, to other times where police officers have really held back.
Well, there have been a couple of instances of overreaction by individual officers. That aside, when you look at what's happened in the course of the movement since it started in Zuccotti Park, police response has been measured. There have also been problems. In New York City, you have 35,000 police officers. You have a much larger force. The capability to keep cycling police officers, have them down there fresh, thinking clearly, assessing the situation. Contrast that with Oakland. They've got a police force of roughly 500 to 600 officers. They have less resources, and they also have a less tolerant history, if you will, because they're used to violence. They're used to riots a lot more than New York. So their police officers are a little harder, but overall, fair assessment is the police reacted within the boundaries of equal force. Matter of fact, in most cases, the police applied less force, which is what police do, and only use equal force if absolutely necessary.
The First Amendment prevents the government from abridging a citizen's right to speech, their right to assemble, and their right to, prevents the federal government from abridging the rights of the free press. So that means that the government can't come in and shut down something that you have to say. And they can't shut down you meeting with a group of people. The problem with mass arrests is that they are a violation of the Fourth Amendment, which is the protection against unreasonable search and seizure. So if the police arrests one occupier or a group of protesters, without individual suspicion that that person has committed a crime, then it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. All of those have been subject to, you might say, fast and loose treatment by the New York Police Department.
Fundamentally, why I'm involved in Occupy Wall Street, and while I'll be involved in something like this no matter what happens, is that I really believe people have a right to play a role in the decisions that govern their day-to-day lives. They have a right and a responsibility to be engaged.
Once people are educated, they'll have the willpower, they'll have the rationale, they'll have the wherewithal to stand up against all the other pendulum swings of emotions and wantings and yearnings for all these other things that the system throws at you. If you're weak, and you're not educated, you're gonna get gullible and you're gonna fall for all of this other foolishness. But if you're educated, none of that will matter.
One of the biggest crimes in America today is that playing by the rules is getting people nowhere, nowhere at all. It's not just unemployment. We only have an 18% unemployment rate. We have 50% of the country realistically living in poverty. That means 32% of the population is employed, but it's still in poverty. That's a huge problem.
Thank you.
I think the goal of the occupation is not to continue to occupy ad infinitum. I think the goal of Occupy is to actually be able to occupy a better world. And then that's what I'd be occupying. I'd be occupying the better world that I've been fighting for.
Sanitation workers. Teachers. Teachers. Police officers.
The movement didn't make us, we made it. And even if it all goes away, problems are still gonna be here. People are still gonna have their houses foreclosed on, still gonna lose their jobs, and I'm still gonna care, and I'm still gonna do something about it.